So I'm glad I finally got a hold of you, man. I imagine you're pretty busy.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's like the, yeah, it's the fun bit when you've released a game and you get to go around and do the odd show here and there.
Oh, do
But
all the promotion and stuff.
yeah, and just like fun. There's lots of fun little indie game festivals and gaming festivals that, there's like a great continuum of, oh, if I do this thing, it's definitely going to help sell more copies of the game. And then it's the other end is like, oh, this won't sell more copies of the game, but I'll meet some really cool developers in a part of the world I've never been to. And, it's kind of cool.
Awesome. So you're actually in the United States right now.
Yes, yeah, I moved out to New York about three and a bit years ago now.
Oh, okay. So you're living in the United States. Nice.
Yeah, I got a green card and everything.
Awesome. So how do you like it out here compared to the UK?
I mean, I lived in the city that was on the south coast of England that didn't have a lot in the way of culture and restaurants. So moving out to New York has been a big upgrade on that side of things. I know it's a very interesting time to be anywhere in the world, right? The interesting political
Oh,
situations
yeah.
happening back in the UK and over here. But I mean, part of the reason I moved out here was, if you want to be telling stories and if you want to be doing stuff with kind of live action, the US is the place to be. Obviously, LA is the hub, but New York has enough going on and is close enough that you can jump between the two. So that was kind of the big part of it.
Yeah, New York is definitely an exciting town, a lot going on there. If you do ever make it out to the West Coast, I'm in San Diego. That's where we're from, which is just south of Los Angeles. It's beautiful, but it's kind of smaller, out of the way, not as
Yeah, no,
big.
I think I went there before. Psyonix based in San Diego.
Psyonix with Rocket
Yes.
League. Yeah.
Yeah, we did. I was doing a Legacy of Kain game that never ultimately came out, and Psyonix were doing the multiplayer component. So I came out, and it was cool because we were both working on this project, and it was like a three-year thing for me, and I think similarly for them. And after that project got cancelled, I made her story, and they made Rocket League. And I think it was like 2015 was the year both of us were kind of tag teaming at all the awards shows. And we'd look over at the Square Enix table and just give them a polite wave as we both enjoyed our shared successes.
Nice.
But yeah, no, I remember San Diego as being pretty fun.
Yeah,
And
it's in we got Comic-Con too. I don't know if you ever make it down here for that, but that's kind of our big thing as well.
I seem to remember that the Psyonix guys, they actually had like a company meeting because they weren't originally based in San Diego, and like decided as a small company where would we like to live. And I think they kind of picked San Diego as being ideal for what they were looking for.
Yeah, it's a great place. It's expensive, but I love it out here. So I just wanted to ask a little bit. Let's start out with a kind of a backstory on you. You've been working in video games for a real long time, right?
I guess, yeah, it's one of those things where you forget and you look at what year it is and you're like, oh my God, time continues to move forward. I mean, I've always been interested in gaming. Like, I grew up in the UK when we had like the 8-bit home computers was kind of what everyone was playing games on. We didn't really get the NES in Europe in the way that kind of did out here, and the whole culture around those games, as they very accurately kind of they sort of nailed that atmosphere in the Bandersnatch show that Netflix did, was very much this kind of homebrew kind of coding scene. Anyone that had one of those systems was also typing in stuff from magazines, was writing their own weird little games. So I was kind of always doing that, noodling around with my friends, making weird little games to entertain each other. And the first thing I ever put out that people took notice of was in 1999. I put out this free text game called Isle, which was innovative in various ways. It was this kind of huge non-linear story thing, which was novel because you only got one turn. Like you would type something, the game would tell you what happened, and then it would kind of reset. So it was like a super extreme Groundhog Day scenario. But like when I made that, that was, you know, as an amateur thing, it was kind of before even the idea of like indie gaming was a thing. And I kind of went off, and then a few years later ended up kind of without meaning to becoming an artist, a video game artist, because I was looking for a job and I had a friend that was in the industry and he was like, hey, you can do art. So I kind of downloaded hacked versions of all of the various software and put together like a portfolio, which luckily no longer exists on the internet. It was just before everything on the internet got got archived. And kind of once I got in, kind of moved fairly rapidly into design and then into lead design. And through a series of lucky accidents, ended up getting to direct Silent Hill Origins, which we kind of took over as a problem project and had very little time to finish it. And from there, I got to go and make my own Silent Hill game, which was kind of Shattered Memories on the Wii. And that was like, that was in 2009 that came out. That was the point where I kind of stepped back and went, huh, writing, directing interesting narrative video games is my thing. And it was like, yeah, 10 years earlier, I'd done this Isle game. And clearly this was like an interest of mine, but it kind of took that long to accidentally realize I could make a career of it. So yeah, I've 10 to 15 years of actually making games for publishers on consoles. Then yeah, in 2015, I released my first indie game, and I've been doing that since.
Yeah, and that's really where I found out about you was in 2015 with Her Story. I was listening to a podcast. I don't think it's still around. It's called Idle Thumbs. It was a great podcast, but they were describing it and they were talking about it. And, you know, Her Story, I've found, is a very difficult game to pitch to people sometimes because it's so different and so unique. How do you pitch that game?
So the thing that, and looking back at it now, with trying to bring out the sequel of Swords Telling Lies, it was a really easy pitch to like non-gamers or to people that were up for something interesting if you showed them like the trailer or whatever. And it was a very opaque pitch. Like when I made that game, I knew I was making something very different and extreme in a certain way, and I wasn't like super optimistic about, oh, this is going to sell a million copies. But I thought, this is such an interesting idea to me. If there is at least, you know, if there is a few other people out there like me, this will resonate with them. So it's really about appealing to that particular niche. The thing I was most mindful of was I didn't want people to buy Her Story and then be surprised by what they'd bought and be like, what the hell have I just spent this money for? So my marketing, such as it was very honest. Like, you know, I think the tagline on Steam was something like a video game about a woman talking to the police. And like the trailer was very honest, but you know, this is this thing. I didn't try and kind of sell it as being more conventional than it was and more exciting than that. But if people saw the trailer, they immediately see, you know, this grainy VHS footage of this woman in an interrogation room. and they instantly get what that is, right? And it helped when her story came out, like the true crime thing was kicking off this kind of renaissance of true crime.
Oh, yeah.
So people get, oh, there's this woman, she's being interviewed by the police, her husband has been murdered. And then when you're told this is a video game, you're going to be exploring this and figuring this thing out and kind of getting to the truth of this. It's interesting because you're like, there aren't that many great video games about exploring a crime or being a detective, despite it being popular elsewhere. And you mm-hmm. probably have a question of, well, how the hell does the game work? Which is, I guess, that's the thing you're talking about, right? Of like, how exactly do you explain how this works? And I think for me, I was banking on the people who didn't need to have that explained, but were like, oh, I'm just interested. Like, mm-hmm. that's where this game is going. That is interesting to me. And then I'll find out when I drop in the game. But actually, like, for non-gamers, you would show them a few minutes of the game. And you know, the central mechanic is essentially searching in this database by typing words. Yeah. So it's kind of like going down a Google rabbit hole. But because it's this fixed set of footage, like you're kind of contained within the story and the experience. So, you know, I think one of the things I was mindful of was I love the idea of alternate reality games and that whole genre of stuff where, you know, there's this cool story being told and it's on the real internet. And then, you know, you're dialing real phone numbers and getting hints. People are trying to solve the puzzles. But whenever I tried to be part of those ARGs, I would always arrive too late, or, you know, I'd start searching for stuff and I would get an FAQ instead of the kind of fictional websites. Mm-hmm. And so partly the idea with her story was like to give you something that has that texture of it feeling like you're kind of searching through and exploring something that's real. But because it's a self-contained video game, it works. Like, you don't get those kind of false positives and things and those problems with the kind of larger ARGs. It's a game that tries to give you the feeling of being a detective, of investigating, of listening to this woman talk and questioning what she's really saying, questioning what is the subtext, putting these pieces together. And you know, it ends up being quite an intimate experience. You spend a lot of time just watching the character played by Viva Seifert, the actress, mm-hmm. you know, just talking about her life. So it ends up being quite a different flavor to most video games.
Yeah, and she did a fantastic job with that too, by the way. And I like the idea of putting it as a Google rabbit hole. I never really thought to phrase it like that, but that is what it feels like. And I really liked how you just pieced together the story in your own way. So, you know, someone else could have entered different search terms and gotten different parts of the story at different times. And it felt very personal when you uncover it in your own way like that. It was a great mix of story and mechanics of a video game, which I think is just, you know, really hard to do. And it's something that I've thought a lot about in recent years. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that there's no formula for doing that. You know, it has been done right. There are games that do it very well. And, but there's no like set standard for that. I don't know. What's your opinion just in general on story and video games?
It's been interesting because, yeah, I started out, even if I wasn't conscious of it, being like the guy that cares about story in games. Like, that's mm-hmm. always been my interest, is like telling stories in interesting interactive ways. And that's always been like natural to me because I, you know, when I grew up, before I went off and wrote indulgent short stories or whatever, I was writing text adventures for my friends. So like mm-hmm. that part of my brain was always plugged in to computers. And, you know, when I started out, you didn't necessarily need a story at all in a game. And the huge opportunity that was working on Silent Hill was incredible because back then, so, you know, I don't know, it's 2006, 2007, maybe we were kind of making Shadow of Memories. There were very few franchises, and maybe Silent Hill was one of the only ones where you could tell a story about a real person in the modern world dealing with internal issues, and take it seriously and be allowed to do that, because otherwise you were telling, you know, you were a space marine or you were some fantastical creature or something. But you know, since that point, you know, the biggest AAA games now, there isn't a huge expectation around the amount of story and the execution of story and the importance of story. They might not necessarily be doing interesting things with how that story unfolds interactively, but, you know, just from a sort of a content level, there is now that expectation. And I think, you know, the indie gaming scene has allowed people to continue to kind of experiment. I think the thing that was interesting about her story, that to some extent was a conscious decision, was so many video games are focused on this idea of you controlling the protagonist and the story unfolds based on your choices. And, you know, if you've played a lot of games or made a lot of games, you kind of know that a lot of times that idea of the choices is an illusion, right? Even in games that are sold on being based on choices, we know that things will double back and there'll be this kind of knotted rope where, you know, you'll make all these choices and there might be a consequence in 3 hours, but then you'll get back to the main story like everyone else. And I kind of struggled with that. And like the Silent Hill Shattered Memories game we made was very much a game exploring this idea of you being the protagonist and the game reflecting your choices. And it kind of tried to subvert that. But with her story, like what makes her story different to a lot of games is it is a game about story. And your role as the player is to be the audience of that story. And you are watching videos. You're not playing the character in the videos. You're not playing the character even of the detective in a literal way. But it's a game that kind of says, what if we took the act of watching a crime story and kind of put all the interactivity in that, in the actual watching and thinking and exploring of the story itself, rather than in kind of traditional video game stuff? Like, you're not walking around rooms, you're not searching through stuff, you're not collecting things or fighting things. You know, it's, and really we kind of built on this with Telling Lies, but on a level, her story and Telling Lies are both games that have a lot in similarity with, like, I'm a huge fan of like Metroid and Zelda. They have a lot in common with exploration games. It's just all of that kind of exploration gameplay is happening in the story content. You are discovering video clips and finding connections, and you know, some of the concepts, names, phrases you uncover essentially become keys or means to unlock more of it. As you play, your kind of awareness of the story, you start to understand it better and put this picture together in your head, just as you do kind of a mental map of the overall level design in a Metroid game or something. So it was really interesting to me to say, well, this is the stuff that is really cool about video games, is this sense of mastery and exploration, of the concentration you bring to bear on the extent to which your imagination is used to bring these worlds to life. And really her story was going, let's do that. Let's give your imagination even more work to do. And let's take the freedom you would have in an open world game and put that on the story. So, you know, if you play Bioshock, say, you have this sense of freedom within the world, but the story as told through, you know, audio diaries is pretty much laid out. They know that most people will get tapes, you know, A, B, C, D, E, to tell them the story. And, you know, if you play something like Gone Home, again, most people are going to find the same letters in roughly the same audio, you know, as they explore. Whereas here it was saying, well, take some of that freedom you have in exploring the world in those 3D games and just put that into the audio tapes and the diaries themselves. Like, what if that story content, which in other games is kind of just littered throughout the cool video game environment, let's make that be as explorable and as kind of, you know, interesting, so that people are making personal choices and following a very personal route through that stuff, which, like I say, gives everyone a sense of involvement and a very personal experience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well put. Now, do you have any interest in working in movies or television? Because, you know, you're a big fan of storytelling, or is video games just your medium that you're comfortable with?
Yes. I mean, this is a question I've been asked hypothetically and then not hypothetically, where like people have offered me, you know, gigs that are in kind of movies or TV. Mm-hmm. And like, I love TV. I love movies. So there's part of me that's like, oh, that would be really neat to go and do one of those things. But the overriding sense I have is the interactive stuff is where I have the ideas that excite me and get me out of bed in the morning. The interactive stuff is the coalface. That is the cutting edge. Everyone is trying to move towards that, you know, in incremental steps or more directly. And so that to me is like, that's where the interesting work is. And there's certainly part of me that feels like it would be easy in some ways to go do those things, because that's a solved problem. And like the crews I've worked with on my projects, we'll get to the end of the project and, you know, everyone has enjoyed themselves because they've had to figure out different ways of working than they normally would and kind of stretch their muscles in different ways. But at the end of it, they're like, whew, that was a whole thing. They're like, let's just go make a normal movie one day. They're like, that would be so easy.
Yeah.
It would be so relaxing. But, you know, the pressure you feel, you know, life is short. And I'm like, I don't know how many projects, you know, the effort to make projects happen and get the funding and stuff is such that, I want to keep working on things that to me feel interesting and fresh, that, you know, and the most exciting thing for me with Her Story was with that game, breaking out of, you know, up until that point, I had made console games for publishers, and that was back, you know, before digital. So it was like, you know, you made a game and it was sold in GameStop, and that was your visibility. Like, you know, they pre-sold it to the sales guy at GameStop and they stocked the shelves, and that was your audience. For someone to play your game, they had to physically walk into GameStop and browse the shelves and go buy the thing. So it was it was very much a gaming audience and a particular type of gaming audience. And with Her Story, with digital distribution, with the advent of phone gaming, that kind of blew up with an audience that included the gaming audience that had played Silent Hill, but also brought in people that were lapsed gamers or wouldn't identify as gamers, and they got it and were able to enjoy it. And for me, I'm just really excited to build on that audience, like just grow it out. Get as many people as possible enjoying these things and understanding how much more involving these types of stories are when you tell them interactively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've got a lot of history of, you know, stories and video games that may not have been done too well. And like you were saying earlier, it just wasn't a priority in early games. And now it's just like, you know, it's the Wild West. It's this whole new venture, and there's so many different things that we can do with it. So it is exciting, and I'm always excited when I see games like yours that are just so different and manage to blend story and games, not just kind of put them together. Because for so long, it just seemed like we always had like cutscene game, cutscene game, cutscene game, and, you know, end credits. But now things are really starting to get interesting with game like yours. Or, you know, recently I started playing Disco Elysium, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what kind of games do you play yourself?
So, yeah, I mean, shipping a game means that you have zero time to play other games.
Yeah.
But on my stack, like, I played the first half an hour to an hour of so many games this year. I was like, I will get back to this, I promise myself. So, yeah, I mean, standout titles this year, Disco Elysium. I had been completely off my radar. Like, I'd seen some screenshots of it, and kind of dismissed it as like an isometric, like a nostalgic isometric thing. And it was only when I think someone gave me a code or was like, you need to check this thing out. And I booted it up and suddenly realized how gorgeous the game is. Like in those, you know, in the smaller screenshot, I hadn't realized it has this kind of hand-painted look to it. And from the get-go, you're like, oh, in terms of the tone and just how much it commits to its tone, like this is doing lots of really fun stuff with the, you know, the idea of a very much that traditional kind of skill check RPG. So desperate to get back into that one. Outer Wilds was a game that I've been kind of aware of for a while, and finally came out this year. And the hour and a half I spent with that, and again, I desperate to go back to it. I saw like two or three things which just blew my mind. You know, that is a game which plays with that Groundhog Day idea. Like you have, I'm going to say 20 minutes before, this isn't really a spoiler, 20 minutes before the universe explodes. And so you're doing all this interesting time loop stuff, and it has a bit of the Metroidiness. Like you have a spaceship, you're exploring these little planets, this kind of platforming gameplay. But with all this, I mean, there's just stuff in there that is so surprising when you discover it. Like it really plays on this idea of discovery and you slowly putting the pieces together of what is happening. That's, yeah, super, super great game. A game that I thought was possibly the most ambitious narrative game I've ever played. And it was that ambition, I think, was sometimes missed by reviewers because it's doing stuff that's so clever and ambitious, it's not even necessarily obvious if they don't kind of foreground it. It was a game called Heaven's Vault by Inkle, who did 80 Days. And I think 80 Days is maybe you hold that up as one of the most polished and beautifully executed kind of pieces of interactive fiction. And I think Heaven's Vault is 100 times more ambitious, so it has some rougher edges, but it is doing stuff that no one else is touching. It's this game where the story is, it's not procedurally generated, but the story is shuffled and assembled around you as you play so that you can kind of do stuff in any order. You can dig into certain bits of the story and it will just flow around you, and you will always have kind of dialogue options and stuff to do. And it does it in such a way that, like I say, I think some reviewers played it and thought it was just like a kind of telltale point and click game with dialogue choices without realizing someone else could come along and play it in an entirely different way. Like I believe it's possible to win this game without ever leaving the first planet. It's possible to completely ignore like the main, like you can play it in all sorts of interesting, awkward ways, and it will kind of support that. So yeah, that was one where I just was constantly in awe of how staggeringly ambitious what they're doing from a mechanical level is. And I think they maybe could have communicated that better so people would realize like, oh wow, this is doing all this amazing stuff. So yeah, those were like the and I love Simago's games, and like Sayonara Wild Hearts this year is not you know, not as narratively heavy as things like Device 6 and Gearwalk that I love by them, but still like the smoothness, it's kind of a love letter to especially like Sega's kind of classic games. Like I love Space Harrier, Outrun. It's kind of this pop album homage to those games, 60 frames a second, gorgeous art design, this incredible music. It's about heartbreak, but through this aesthetic of like 80s video games. So that was a delight. I continued to play for this year Zelda Breath of the Wild, which is my game of the year every year since it came out. That's just like an incredible piece of work. And just I think just kind of overshadows everything else everyone is doing. But yeah, that's me. I like when I first my kind of teens, late teens, I was obsessed with like the immersive sims. Like I was obsessed with Thief, Deus Ex, Ultima Underworld, System Shock.
Okay.
And that was like my original kind of hardcore love. And then once I started working in games, I kind of went back to Nintendo, and that's when I started to have a profound appreciation for Zelda, Mario, Metroid, like just the mm-hmm. And continuing now to just, you know, the respect they have for their players, I think is becoming rarer and rarer. And I mm-hmm. think for me, like Breath of the Wild was the ultimate expression of that. Here is an open world game, which feels radically different to other open world games because it's actually fun to explore its world. Like the mm-hmm. reward of that game is to explore, whereas so many other open world games, the traveling through the world feels like a chore to get you to the next mission marker or whatever. But you know, just the way it feels to walk around and interact with the world in those games, just the handcrafted nature of that world, like it didn't feel like it wasn't full of filler. The joy of just being present in that landscape was in itself its kind of a reward. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm very much I love stuff that does interesting things with narrative, but I also the way those Nintendo games make me feel, you know, that's my two loves.
Yeah, they make fantastic games. Now, unfortunately, I don't own any consoles, and I haven't since, I think, the Dreamcast. So every now and then, I really feel like I'm missing out. And Breath of the Wild, I've never heard a bad thing said about that game. Nothing but praise. And I don't know, maybe one of these days it'll be enough to make me buy a Switch or something or whatever you can play that on. But I wanted to talk about Telling Lies. So that's your new game. And
yep.
That's like, I feel like it expands on a lot of the stuff that Her Story did. It's like a bigger story, more people involved, and a lot more stuff going on there. And, you know, I wanted to ask like a specific question here. Now, I know that you're a big Hitchcock fan. Now, did you have like a cameo at all? Did you have like your Hitchcock cameo anywhere in this game? Were you in the background somewhere?
Everyone always tries to get me to do that. I'm not a huge fan of Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. Like if I ever see what is it, 0451, it's like the Irrational Games keypad mm-hmm. code that every immersive sim has to have, it always throws me out the experience.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I recognize that reference. So people always trying to get me to do stuff. I'm trying to think. I don't think I am in there anywhere. I think that there might be like there's like a scanned in manual that like is on the desktop in the game, in like the virtual desktop. And I think there's like some screenshots in that, and one of those might have me in there. So I might have, I might have ended up actually giving people a teeny, teeny, teeny little cameo.
Yeah.
The Easter eggs is always mm-hmm. like, I like the Easter eggs to be the game itself, like, oh, like I dug and discovered some cool little thing. Like for me, the Easter eggs in Telling Lies are the clips that don't directly impact the main plot but are just weird or interesting or just give you some, you know, mm-hmm. insight into the characters that in themselves feel special, and you feel like, oh, I bet not many people found this thing, like this cool weird little clip.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to spoil anything about the game at all, but you know, there was a reference to a movie, Lady Eve, in that, which I thought might have been hinting at something. If you're familiar with the game and the story, I maybe it ties in. I don't know. I'm dancing around it because I don't want to give anything away. But I thought that was really cool. But how was your experience working on this game compared to Her Story? Because it just seems so much bigger.
Yeah, I mean, so from the get go, like I didn't want to make a direct sequel to Her Story because I like stuff to feel interesting to me and kind of different in some way. But after a little bit of time had passed, I kind of got to look back at Her Story and look at it, you know, as not as the thing that I was in the middle of making, but like have some perspective on it. And I was really just interested in this idea, like I say, of taking those exploration verbs and applying them to the content and the video, and what does that mean? And I was really taken with how intimate some people found Her Story and what a personal experience it was. And there was this couple of story ideas and events that I wanted to tackle, and it suddenly jumped out that a similar format would enable me to explore those, but I really wanted to find more ways to give you the ability to explore the video, more ways to kind of be hands-on with it. Wanted to make something bigger and messier and more colorful. And so that kind of was where Telling Lies started to come together, and had the opportunity to team up with Annapurna, which made a lot of sense because they're, you know, a new game publisher, but they have all this history in movies, and like the types of movies they make are always very interesting character driven things, very very unique. Like the voices that they kind of pick out tend to be those that are telling interesting stories that I haven't necessarily seen before. And so, you know, we got together and we started putting this story together, and, you know, spent a good long while assembling the story. And when we were finished, it was very big. And like, I love the fact that Her Story was a game that people would often binge in a single evening, maybe, you know, slightly into the night, but they'd kind of, I like games that value your time in that way. And that also, it's very an intense thing to sit down and play a game all the way through and kind of have that experience. So really, like, from the outset, I was imagining Telling Lies was that. But then as we're trying to tell this story, which has essentially four main characters and spans 2 years and so is big, once we'd kind of broken it and then we'd written the script and we looked at it and then we did like a test version where I brought some people in and we kind of filmed just like a read through of it, we realized we had quite a big game. But it didn't feel like we should cut anything back, because I think there's a certain, like I refer to as being kind of messy and colorful, but there's a certain not indulgence, but there's like a, like there is stuff in this game that you might cut if it was a movie, right? There are textures and scenes, and there's a pace to it, and we can just hang out with these characters in a way that is kind of the point of it. Like it's almost, when we were shooting it, we would refer to it as an anti-movie. You know, if a movie is 90 minutes of carefully, succinctly chosen shots that take you shot by shot through the story the director wants to tell, this is much more, it's unfurled and it's loose and it's explorable. So we kind of committed to that. And then, you know, we went through the process of casting it and, you know, bringing in a few recognizable faces, just putting together an incredible team to then try and do justice to this big story we were telling. And, you know, then we went and spent 3 months in LA shooting this thing, which was constant hard work. Like there was no let up because there was just so much to do. So it was a very intense experience, but went very well. Like everyone kind of, the chemistry was there. Everyone was excited every day to come to set and do something a little bit different. So we ended up with something that I think in its own way is pretty special.
Yeah, it seems like it must have been very difficult, because some of these clips that you're watching, they're almost 10 minutes long and they're all just one continuous take. So, I mean, did you just do multiple ones till you got one you liked? Or?
Yeah, so the way we shot it, because the premise of the game is that you're most seeing two people talking to each other over the internet, and you are just watching one side of the conversation at once. So it's a game that wants you to sometimes wallow in a very uncinematic texture of just watching people listening, or there are moments where not much is happening, or you're suddenly seeing more intense emotions and trying to figure out what's happening on the other side of the call. So for me, it was really important that what you're seeing on the actor's face was truthful, and that the energy between the different characters, the chemistry there would be kind of captured. So the setup we had was we had two crews, and two locations running simultaneously, and the actors would be able to see each other through their devices. So that, you know, if you see a wife in bed speaking to her husband, who's in a completely different city in his apartment talking to her, like, we made sure that was actually happening, and they were running simultaneously. So yeah, then you get into, if you have a scene that's 10 minutes long, and you're 9 minutes through it and an airplane goes overhead, or a stand falls down in one location, you know, or someone forgets their line or whatever, then you lose all of that and you have to go back to the start again.
Yeah.
So it's very intense, and the actors loved it because it was closer to, say, doing live theater than it was film. Like, you know, when they shoot a movie, it's lots of different setups of the same scene, different camera angles. Even if they're in a conversation with someone, they might not actually be there on set. It might be their stand-in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is a process which they're entirely used to, so that, you know, their skill is being able to keep that character alive despite all these setups and everything.
Yeah.
But here it was kind of different. You know, they went into a location and we closed the door and everything was kind of dressed 360 degrees. So the location was all there if they chose to turn around or walk in a different direction. And then we, you know, call action, and for 10 minutes, they're present as that character, and kind of bouncing off the other character and stuff. So it was a thing, and requires you know, I've done stuff before where you have, you know, some actors do not remember lines great. And so, you know, for these actors, it was like, right, you're coming in and you have, you know, a 10-minute scene to get through. So it required a lot of kind of dedication and hard work from them.
Yeah. Oh, and you had some experienced actors there. I recognized a few of them. There was Angela Serafian from, I'd seen her in Westworld. And the little girl as well. I mean, I was pretty impressed with the girl who played the young Alba, because I work with kids, and I know I teach a video production class. So I work with kids and cameras and stuff, and I know that they can be very difficult. But as young as she was, she did a fantastic job with that. And she was in that Bird Box movie with.
When we Netflix. Were casting for that role, everyone was telling me, like, the character is 6 years old, and I really felt like I wanted to see a 6 year old on screen, because having seen my daughter kind of grow through those ages, and that was a big inspiration for that character. There's a big difference between a 6 year old looking at her parents and, you know, a 9 year old or an 8 year old. And, you know, everyone was saying the sensible thing to do here is, if you have an older child, they can do more hours on set, you know, they're going to be more experienced. But I was doggedly committed to the 6 year old, and we saw a lot of kids. And then one day the casting director was like, oh, you need to see Vivian. And they also sent me like the trailer for Bird Box, because I think it hadn't been out then, or there was a clip from Bird Box. And, you know, one of the things when you're casting kids is you, to some extent, are casting the parents, because they're going to be on set every day, and, you know, they need to be cool with the content and just, you know, they've become part of the crew, really. And I watched this clip from Bird Box and I was like, wow, if they let her, like, you know, run through the woods blindfolded, being screamed at by Sandra Bullock and chased by weird monsters, they must be pretty chill. And met Vivian, and she was incredible. Like, she for a 6 year old, like, is so professional and kind of on it. But with, she's not precocious. Like, she doesn't have any of that kind of, you know, she's not one of those kind of child star kind of personalities. But she would keep me on my toes. She'd be, you know, I'd give her lines and she'd be like, I don't think, like, I'd say this right now. She's like, I feel, and she would throw stuff at me. And there's, like, a few scenes that she wasn't allowed to read, where she comes in halfway through a scene, and for obvious reasons, she's not allowed to read the previous pages because of the content. But she'd be like, Sam, I really need to know what's happening in these scenes to kind of understand what you're aiming for as a director. She was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Everyone, it was a great cast. It really came together. Like, one of the things we tried was it's really important that like the chemistry between the four main leads, like each kind of pairing would have this different chemistry. And because that is like, you know, you can play this in such a way where you, mm-hmm. you put up a clip of someone and it's not immediately obvious who they're talking to. And, you know, we got it to a place where you can just tell from the chemistry and the body language and how people are speaking, like who is speaking to who and stuff. And yeah, we got this, yeah, wonderful cast. That, and you know, it's, we're obviously living in interesting times where, you know, these hybrid forms are becoming a bigger deal. Mm-hmm. You know, this week, our friend Hideo Kojima, you know, his new game is out with Norman Reedus in it.
Yeah.
And a couple of other famous faces, and some weird celebrity cameos. Mm-hmm. And you know, there is this slowly, people from TV and film, because they grew up with games, are like, hey, I want to do some game stuff. Mm-hmm. And slowly their managers are letting them. It used to be that, you know, the managers would be like, no, unless they're going to pay you millions and millions, yeah. you're not doing video game work, right? It's not going to help your career. Mm-hmm. But they're starting to realize like there's interesting stuff happening in it. And with Telling Lies, you know, we got in the door because we had Annapurna behind us. But what got them in a room with me was we sent them the script. And they read the script, and some of them had played her story, and they were like, I'm in. You know, this, it's a very easy conversation when you're speaking to an actor or having like a coffee with them, and they're like, yeah, they sent me the script. I started reading at 7 p.m., and by 10 p.m., I'd finished. And, you know, and you're like, cool. You, like the, for them to sit down and, you know, the number of scripts they get and stuff, for them to just sit and read the whole thing and then have questions for me and stuff, you kind of know that you found someone that this resonates with.
Yeah. So I hate to ask this question because I'm sure you've had to answer it so many times, but I guess, you know, what everybody's wondering is what's next? What do you, what project do you envision next?
So we're almost, I guess, in we know what the next thing is, and starting to do the fun bit. For me, like the funnest bit of any project is the research bit. It's when you go, right, I'm going to buy these 30 books, watch these movies, dig into this thing, get the researcher to pull up, just where you get to just wallow in cool stuff. And that, like, for me, is a really exciting part of the process, because that's when the most interesting ideas get sparked. And, you know, you start with this high-level idea of this is what I think the project is and I think the characters are. And, mm-hmm. and just by going off and just exposing yourself to really cool stimuli, it gets interesting. So we're kind of, yeah, we're laying the groundwork for that. It is, you know, if Telling Lies was... five times as complicated as her story and was kind of pushing things. You know, I felt like at the time when I made her story, doing a crime fiction story with a woman in the central role with this kind of gothic modern day murder mystery felt like that's pretty left field for what most video games are about and the kinds of characters that we get to hang out with in video games. Mm-hmm. And bolstered by that, Telling Lies was, okay, I'm going to go even further. Like, we're now, you know, the type of story that Telling Lies is, the subject matter, the characters, again, is very uncommon in video gaming. We're telling, you know, essentially like a political relationship thriller that's set in the real world. It is about adult relationships. It's about what it is to be a parent. It's about privacy and intimacy and all these things. Yeah, the next one is like, okay, let's keep going. Let's do something even more left field and it's more ambitious. Like, I kind of, with the scale of Telling Lies, was mindful that, like, when I made her story, I had no idea it was going to work. I just knew that this was a really cool thing and that mm-hmm. I was pushing myself to an extreme. And so with Telling Lies, it was important that aspects of that production felt like huge risks, felt like this is really ambitious. You know, I could have dialed certain things back, but it felt like, no, there's no, you know, it's more interesting to push and go for those ambitious things and surround yourself with people that are going to help you achieve that. So we're continuing to do that. It's it's going to be a story driven video game. There is going to be aspects of the kind of sort of exploration and nonlinearity, seeing telling lies, but pretty different is all I can say. Mm. And it is nominally in the horror genre,
nice,
which is cool because having done that in Silent Hill, and her story was a gothic thriller. Telling mm-hmm. Lies is very much, like I say, this kind of conspiracy thriller, investigative thriller. It's cool to play with some of those textures again of like really screwing with people's heads and doing stuff that mm-hmm. is kind of dark and scary and weird.
Yeah, well, that I can't wait, man. That sounds great. So, and the horror thing totally sold me too. I love horror movies, so that anything in that genre. Gonna be great.
I mean, it's a great time to be into horror. Like I just started subscribing to Shudder, and just mm-hmm. there's so many cool horror movies coming out at the moment. And the BS, what is it, people call elevated horror thing. I think that we can just kind of ignore that noise because like a lot of the horror movies I've loved have always been those that kind of blur the boundaries of genre or do things which, mm-hmm. Go really deep on some of the ideas and stuff. But it's just so much interesting stuff happening in that space. And so, part of me is itching to have a crack at it.
Very cool. Very cool. So Telling Lies, that's on Steam. That's on mobile as well too, right? Like that's pretty much
everywhere. Yeah, it's on the App Store. You wouldn't necessarily know it because I think some of the sex and politics in the game means that it is not the kind of thing that gets heavily featured, which is a shame because I love the audience I found on mobile through Her Story. Like it is, mm-hmm. everyone has a phone now. So it's a beautiful broad audience. And I think to play Telling Lies on a computer is cool because you have this embodiment of the virtual computer, that does a whole thing, but at the same time playing it on a phone, the very device in which you might Skype or FaceTime your loved ones, this device that is very intimate and personal to you, to sit in bed and play Telling Lies on that is in its own way freaky and kind of interesting. And like the looks I've had when I've been testing this game in like a cafe and people kind of walk past over my shoulder, see me having these intimate, what it looks like I'm having an intimate Skype with someone. It's too late for me to explain that it's a video game. Get it on the App Store, get it on Steam, GOG, and watch this space for
awesome.
Any future platforms.
Absolutely. And then if people want to follow you, you're on Twitter, you're on, I don't know, Instagram, what's your social?
I am Mr. Sambalo, M-R Sambalo, all one word, which for the longest time, like when I started getting internet accounts, like Sambalo was already taken. So rather than be Sambalo 4026, like it was like, I'm going to put Mr. Sambalo at the front. But it led to, for some reason, people would always pass it as Mrs. Ambalo. So they thought that I was an Asian lady, which, I don't know, that may have opened some doors and closed some doors, but I think when Her Story came out, I was invited to join a panel of female game developers of note, and I had to get in front of them and explain that I was not the best person to be on that panel. People can see me on Twitter and I will alternate dumb stuff with interesting observations on narrative gaming.
Awesome.
As best I can.
Very cool. Well, man, I can't thank you enough for doing this. This was really cool talking to you, talking about story and video games. And so thank you for that. And thank you for making games that I feel like kind of pioneer storytelling in video games. I really like what you're doing.
Thanks, man. Thanks for playing.